presidential motorcade had just passed through heavy crowds in downtown Dallas,
destroying the media lies and dismantling the narratives, one story at a time. It's the Adrian Slade Show.
You know, I think I need to start out by saying something, especially to the millennials or to the low-information voters or those who just don't keep up with the news. Do you really want to know what conservatism or libertarianism, or like I call myself, conservatarianism, a conservatarian like myself, what that looks like? It's about freedom. It's about liberty. It's about individuality. It's about self-governance. It's about the fact that you can do what you want as long as you don't impose yourself upon somebody else. We don't require a collective mentality in order to attack someone for not adhering to what the mob requires, to put them into submission. I'm Adrian Slade. Thanks for tuning in. Isn't that what they thought conservative Christians would do? Isn't that what they always portray conservatives or, libertarians, those who believe in small government? Isn't that what they think that we're going to do? I mean, LGBT activists, they're out there, they're concerned about Mike Pence, who doesn't say anything, you know? Adam Rippon, the skater out there, always going off on Mike Pence. You know, you hear these LGBT activists going off about Trump. He's going to roll back all the ground that we've made over the years and put us back in the dark ages. You know, even though he's got Peter Thiel, you know, the PayPal CEO who is gay, he's got his support. You know, it's just the fact that they're on this side. It doesn't matter the name. Plug in Kasich, plug in Rubio, plug in Cruz, plug in for Trump. It doesn't matter. It's the fact that they think that the conservative wing of society is oppressive. But what's really oppressive? I mean, seriously, what is really oppressive? Is it an organization that is going to require the Boy Scouts to drop the name boy after 108 years? You know, and then is that same organization going to be forced to accept girls into their organization to the point where the Girl Scouts are then going to get angry and start crying patriarchal whatever? It's the patriarchy. They're taking over Girl Scouts, and now we don't have girls applying for Girl Scouts because they're in Boy Scouts, and it's just mind-numbing. You know, I mean, who is the real stalwarts of liberty here? Is it the progressives? Oh, yeah, we're progressing right along with this cultural appropriation, you know? We're moving right ahead with cultural appropriation brown shirts out there shouting everyone down over every sort of thing that they're interested in. I mean, you know, we've got people out there angered over the cartoon character Apu from The Simpsons. Seriously. I mean, it's a real thing. In fact, Matt Groening, he basically said, yeah, you know, people love to pretend they're offended. You know, it gives them a sense of power, really. It makes them think, you know, I'm special because I'm in this minority group. And, you know, I've got a uniqueness about myself because, you know, I've been oppressed. And I really think I need to take a stand. And it gives them this activism and this self-worth, you know, that they never had because they view themselves as worthless. And they're trying to find a space for themselves. And luckily, you know, we actually have someone breaking open the concept of freedom of thought. Yeah, Kanye West, believe it or not, of all people. And we talked about that on our quick rant. Don't make him the conservative thought leader. Let him use his branding that he's built. Let him evangelize and use his testimony of his newfound enlightenment to break the movement open and step out of the way. Allow him to do that work. Don't just go, hey, Kanye West kind of says some stuff that I kind of like. Make 2020 Kanye West. No, that's not how that works. But he tweeted out, we're opening up the conversation to psychologists, sociologists, and philosophers of the world, and we're moving away from infiltrating the youth and using them as a tool to create a cult following based off of a desire to fit in. People have their own voice. I can get behind that. I mean, am I wrong there? He's got a point. I mean, seriously. So, you know, I have to think about the fact that cultural appropriation has seemingly popped up almost as much as, taking down the monuments last year. You know, we were talking about getting rid of all of those, you know, slave-owning, judgmental monuments. All of the founders and the Confederate soldiers and the Confederate leaders. And, oh, they're gleaming at us in judgment and they're making us feel, you know, insecure. We got to get rid of them. Well, now they've decided to go after any sort of interest you may have. You know, Dave Rubin from the Rubin Report, who basically kind of changed his focus when he found out the progressive sham and the progressive fascism when he was on the Young Turks and, you know, went out on his own, rediscovered what it means to be what freedom means as far as libertarianism goes. He thought it was in progressivism. He rediscovered that it was somewhere else. But he knew what he meant. He knew what it meant. He knew what those principles were. He just thought it was somewhere where it wasn't because they lied to him and said, this is where it's at, until the veil came off. And he said during a Q&A last night, I told a white kid that he could have dreadlocks because it's up to him to do whatever he wants to do with his own body. Protesters started screaming. They literally want to tell you how to do your hair and how to dress. Collectivist authoritarianism runs amok. Exactly. I mean, it's why I get livid over these, what I call the true fascist, the progressive left. I mean, there was an article about how, well, you know, white kids doing rock reggae could be cultural appropriation. You know, there would be no great music like Sublime. You know, Bradley Nowell wouldn't be pumping out those hits before he just went over the edge with the needle, and we wouldn't have gotten 40 Ounces to Freedom. We wouldn't have gotten songs like, What I Got, if cultural appropriation stepped in. And you know what? You know where he got it from? He got it from the Bad Brains. He got it from a group of black dreadlock guys who played reggae and punk. And these guys culturally appropriated white punk music, stepped into a scene that was dominated by white punks, that was dominated by even racist white punks, stole their sound, did it better than them, gained the respect of the entire scene, was even banned from one scene in D.C., which they did a song called Banned in D.C., went to New York and thundered that scene as well. And that begat Sublime and reggae kids like that. Because what they would do is they would rage up these amazing punk songs and turn around and throw a roots reggae song at you and just killed it. So it doesn't matter where the culture comes from. It doesn't matter that you like something that you like. The authoritarianism in the left is seeping in to say, hey, you can't like that style. You can't adopt these things. You can't wear that prom dress. Yeah, that stupid prom dress story. You know, that kid, he is the reason why Twitter sucks. I don't know if you've seen this, but Jeremy Lamb, he was upset because a prom dress by Keziah, she put online, you know, I'm going to the prom, and she's got this dress on. The Federalist kind of summed this up as saying, it's prom season. High school girls in America have spent significant amounts of time and money to find the dress that makes them the prettiest girl at the party. Keziah of Utah, I think I'm pronouncing her name right, found a perfect prom dress that she looks great in. Happily, she posted her prom pictures on Twitter. That was probably a mistake, and I'll get into that. What she didn't expect was for a self-designated culture cop, Jeremy Lamb, to ruin her perfect day by tweeting, "My culture is not your bleeping prom dress." It went viral, and Keziah found herself having to defend herself against wild charges of racism. Now, Jeremy Lamb was upset because the prom dress that she wore was a capayo, I guess that's how you say it, a traditional Chinese dress. Lamb went on his Twitter rant by lecturing on the history of capayo as he understands it. He concluded by saying, quote, "I'm proud of my culture, including the extreme barriers marginalized people within that culture have had to overcome through those boundaries. For it to simply be subject to American consumerism and cater to a white audience is parallel to colonial ideology." Listen to all that indoctrination and spin there. Anyways, back to the article. However, Lamb himself gets Capayo's history wrong. It was also known as Changanism, or Changdam, I guess that's how you say it, in Cantonese, was originally Manchu's women's traditional attire. And the Manchu are an ethnic minority living in northeast China, led by their fearless leader. The Manchu army conquered the Ming army, an established army by Han Chinese, and ended the Ming dynasty. But, you know, this guy, he had his own cultural appropriation going on. He tweeted, which people found because they dug through his Twitter account to show his hypocrisy, about him eating tamales with chopsticks and using the N-word several times, you know, because I guess he's a minority, so he can go, yeah, N-word, damn, you know. But, you know, that's why Twitter sucks sometimes, because of douche nozzles like this guy who rip on sweet girls in prom dresses over cultural appropriation. You know, next time you're at Taco Bell, maybe we can send you an MS-13 to beat you down. You know, next time you want to get sushi, maybe we can commission a Japanese ninja to roundhouse kick you in the throat. You know, if we see you ordering a curry dish, maybe we blow dried curry into your culturally offended eyes. You people have so much privilege that you have to seek out things to be offended. That's the culture of America. America has done so well for you that you can get offended over some girl wearing a dress to the prom. Now, don't get caught bobbing your head to some hip-hop at Coachella, because we'll call some West Side Crips down from Compton to beat you down. You know, that's how we can get the culture in shape for you, since you want to be the arbiter of that. But, you know, you want to show why none of us wants to appropriate the Chinese culture that Jeremy Lamb so richly admires? Especially as it is right now? You know, I want to get serious and show you why conservative libertarianism, conservatarianism is miles away from the principles of progressive fascism, who have an endearing love. They have this love affair for the ideology that is enslaving the citizens of China as we speak. The citizens who are having their brains scanned as we speak for their productivity and for data mining by their government. Their government is having them use eye retina scans to regulate the usage of their bathrooms so that they can regulate the water intake and the amount of toilet paper they use. The fact that they're going to have credit scores, social credit scores, like an episode of The Black Mirror, where you have to be nice or you get marked down. And, oh, you get marked down so much you can't fly on a plane. You'll have to use a bus, maybe even walk. You know, they're destroying mega churches and limiting the access to the Bible. We're going to get into all that here in just a moment. But we have to look at the fact that the other day, the news all over the place was celebrating May Day. All over the place. Articles were coming out from the New York Times. Happy 200th birthday, Karl Marx. By the way, you were right. Right about what? Right about the fact that when you logged on to read the article, it said, subscribe now to continue enjoying the New York Times. 50% off for 1 year by clicking this button. That's called capitalism, you idiots. But, you know, the Washington Post can't be outdone. Opinion, be progressive Democrats, not merely liberal. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. These people are freaking nuts. And they went on to, in fact, there was even a tweet that said, anarcho-syndicalist, I don't even know how you even say it, a bunch of anarchists from Bangladesh took to the streets against labor exploitation, miserable salaries, and poverty with these flags that are clearly anarchist flags. But May Day, you know, they were talking about how Karl Marx was right. And never mind the fact that May Day came from the rising up of the Russian workers and the female Russian workers, which ultimately opened the door for, you know, the Lenin takeover, the Bolshevik revolution of communism to usher in Russia. You know, never mind those facts of history. We're going to hear about everybody celebrating May Day on May 1st by ringing bells. Yeah, and it's a pagan holiday. Yeah, go pagans. Yeah, forget about the natural rights given by God. Let's celebrate paganism. Yay, let's celebrate communism. Because we've had that seed planted throughout college. That's why they love China. That's why the news media, when the Olympics were going on in China, they love China. They didn't mind, never mind the fact that they're walking around with masks on in the most polluted area in the globe. Never mind the fact that the buildings from the budget that they received were half finished. Never mind the fact that the Chinese gymnast team was all doped up and they, half of them were under the age of 12. But that's okay, because we're going to celebrate the fact that they have such a great planned society, that look at how they're in lockstep doing these little routines during their opening ceremony. Wow, that's so great. Everybody is so subservient to the government that everything looks so choreographed and well. It must be a great place to live, to have the same car. You know, we learned that back in Russia when they had the same white sedan, when they had the same apartment with the same square footage. And what did they do? I want American blue jeans. What did they do? I like Dallas. Yeah. You didn't live through that, so you don't remember that. I do. I remember the longing for blue jeans. The fact that they loved, you know, 80s hair metal so much that they had their own with Gorky Park. Okay. So on the other side of the break, I'm going to get into some stories that we've read about with China to show that their love affair for the Chinese government model, which is the one that they want for globalization, the one that they want because on the outside, it looks like it's a capitalist society, but it's really a venture communist society where the government controls the means of production and allows business to have ownership of some of its shares, where it's really on the outside looked at the other way around, where to do business in China, you have to allow the Chinese government to buy interest in your company so that they can do business in the Chinese market, okay? That's why bootlegging is all over the place, because companies don't want to give up that control, and China just takes that technology, or China, you know, does take some of that control, and that that technology gets taken and replicated by Chinese government and sold at a lower rate within its own borders. We're going to get into some stories that should scare you about where China is headed and why the progressives are to be fought in America down, because we can't allow them to have the ground to implement that kind of craziness here in the United States. Back in a second.
This is Adrian Slade.
Broadcast.
So, since liberals just love authoritarian governments, I mean, they went crazy over Gorbachev when the Soviet Union was going on. They love Iran. In fact, that's why they're taking, you know, Iran's side over Benjamin Netanyahu and the Mossad, who did this amazing mission where they went in and basically surveilled a warehouse for a year, and then one day went in and took a big treasure trove worth of proof to show that Iran is still making nuclear weapons besides the deal that we had. The fact that they love, well, he went out and basically outed Iran and showed them to be frauds, but yet the left is going to back Iran over Israel, of course, because they're anti-Semites. But then on top of that, they love Cuba. Now, they're not going to talk about Venezuela and the complete collapse that's going on there still at this moment, where I saw a video with kids scaling buildings like Spider-Man, trying to look for any sort of food, some sort of morsel in that building. They're not going to talk about that, but they're going to look at these different governments as, you know, they're the trailblazing, you know, bastions of hope, because they control their citizens with centralized planning. And, you know, they've got leaders at the top who will do best for their citizens, because you, the idiots, just can't figure it out on your own. So let's take a look at what's happening in China. This is one of the places that the liberals love. Xing Jinping, you know, however he says his name. He wants to protect every inch of China's territory as president as he prepares to rule for life. This from the Independent UK. Chinese President Xi Jinping vowed to protect every inch of his country's territory in a nationalistic speech, which saw him claim that his nation was ready to fight bloody battles against our enemies. In his closing speech to the country's parliament, he said that Taiwan would face the punishment of history for any attempt at separatism. While in an attempt to warning the U.S., he said any efforts to split with China were doomed to fail. His comments came after a decision by Donald Trump to sign legislation that encouraged U.S. officials to meet their Taiwanese counterparts, a move that infuriated China, which views the self-ruled island as a wayward Chinese province. The Chinese people are united in a belief that every inch of our great motherland absolutely cannot and absolutely will not be separated from China, Mr. Xi told 3,000 members of the National People's Congress. He said the mainland would continue to promote peaceful unification with Taiwan. despite the island's 23 million residents being strongly in favor of maintaining their independence. He said this to set the shape of the country's future in the coming decades after the Communist Party abolished presidential term limits, allowing him to rule indefinitely. You hear that? This guy has gone ahead and said, all right, yeah, I'm the president. We're going to get rid of term limits. So I'm going to be your leader from here on out. You know, Mr. Z stressed the absolute leadership of the party of which he is head in all aspects of Chinese life. He said his country would promote, quote, high quality development that values innovation over speed growth. Invoking China's historical achievements in governance and culture, he stressed the importance of a national unity as it strove to reach new goals in poverty alleviation and economic development in coming years. So this guy basically made himself leader for life. And, you know, a lot of people kind of ripped on President Trump because he was trying to tweak the media by saying, hey, you know, maybe we'll try something like that here in America. In fact, he's kind of gone against that. Obviously, it was a joke because, and this isn't me defending Trump, but Trump actually put out there the other day that we should have term limits in Congress, which I'm fully for. You know, people say, oh, well, you need, you've got term limits. They're called elections. Well, you don't have term limits that, you know, those elections, they don't destroy the seniority apparatus built within the system that term limits would effectively destroy. You see, that's where the difference is. I'm not talking about whether or not you put an incumbent back into power. 90% of the incumbents are going to get reelected anyways, just based on name ID and incumbency. It's a fact. The term limits are meant to destroy the good old boy seniority network within Congress, within the Senate, within the House that's been established and built that wasn't in the original design. But anyways, going back to some of the articles on China, China's not really down with the Christians. And apparently the Pope is helping them along. But this is an interesting story that I read about Chinese police dynamite a Christian megachurch. This is from the New York Times. Chinese police officers demolished one of the country's largest evangelical churches using heavy machinery and dynamite to raise the building where more than 50,000 Christians worshipped. The Golden Lampstead Church was one of the at least two Christian churches demolished by authorities in recent weeks, part of what critics described as a national effort to regulate spiritual life in China. Under President Xi Jinping, the government has destroyed churches or removed their steeples and crosses as a part of a campaign that reflects the Communist Party's longstanding fear that Christianity, viewed as a Western philosophy, is a threat to the party's authority. Look at that. Worshipping God is a threat to the party's authority. Who does that sound like to you? Sounds very very DNC-ish, very Democrat. I don't know. The Global Times, a state newspaper, described the building's destruction as part of a citywide campaign to remove illegal buildings and quoted the unidentified official as saying that the church had been secretly constructed without proper permits. Oh, wow, they didn't get government approval and was initially disguised as a warehouse. Members of the megachurch, however, have previously clashed with authorities, including in 2009 when the police confiscated Bibles and imprisoned several of the congregation's leaders. On officers of the People's Armed Police, a state paramilitary organization, detonated explosives in the church's underground sanctuary and destroyed the rest of the building. Quote, the repeated persecution of Golden Lampstead Church demonstrates that the Chinese government has no respect for the religious freedom or human rights, says Bob Fu, the group's founder. China Aid said that the building was built by the married evangelist Wang Zhanggang and Yang Ronglali, with nearly 3 million in contributions from local Christians, but that it had never been registered with the authorities, a legal requirement. See, government always has to step in. Officially, Chinese citizens are free to practice their religion of choice, but the government tightly controls spiritual life. Gosh, they're going to control a lot of other things in the stories that I read coming up. But anyways, and in some cases, bans certain groups. The authorities also demolished a Catholic church in Shaanxi province, southwest of Shaanxi province, destroying an altar and confiscating vestments that more than 60 million Christians live in China. At least half of them worship in unregistered churches. So not only did they destroy megachurches, but China stopped online sales of the Bible. In Beijing, the Chinese government has banned online retailers from selling the Bible, moving in the wake of new rules to control the country's burgeoning religious scene. The measures to limit Bible sales were announced over the weekend and began taking effect by this past week. By Thursday, internet searches for the Bible came up empty on leading online Chinese retailers such as JD.com, Taobao, and Amazon, although some retailers offered analysis of the Bible or illustrated storybooks. The retailers did not respond to requests for comment, although Thursday is the start of a long holiday weekend in China. The move aligns with a long-standing effort to limit the influence of Christianity in China. Among China's major religions, which include Buddhism, Taoism, Islam, and folk beliefs, Christianity is the only one whose major holiday texts cannot be sold through normal commercial channels. I wonder why that is. And they've got their own net neutrality, don't they? And look what they do with it. They eliminate sales of the Bible. That's why you don't give government control of the internet. You can sit there and say, oh, well, you know, it's throttling speeds and we're not going to watch Netflix as quickly and, you know, someone's going to give more bandwidth to someone else. No, government then has the slippery slope open door to do as they want and basically throttle you out of your religion if they want to. The advent of online retailers create a loophole that made the Bible easily available. This was especially important in China, given the growing dominance of online shopping. Closing of that loophole follows new government religious regulations that have effectively tightened rules on Christianity and Islam while promoting Buddhism, Taoism, and folk religion as part of President Xi Jinping's efforts to promote traditional values. The move also comes as China is engaged in negotiations with the Vatican to end the split between the underground and government-run Catholic Church. See, this is where we were talking about that leftist freaking pope, the false prophet, as I like to call him. And I know if you, some of you Catholic listeners take offense to that, I just look at it based on biblical understanding. I mean, the guy basically said, hey, if you want world peace, or if you want peace, we need to get rid of all weapons. Peace is through the saving grace of Christ. You know what I mean? The grace that we're not deserving of, but he gives us anyways. That's peace. That you want to ban violence? Get everybody to willingly understand and accept the grace of Jesus, and they will become moral, virtuous people that will not, you know, be violent. I mean, sin is in the world. You can't avoid that. But the Pope out there acted as though gun control and weapon control, banning weapons is going to be the answer. He's always talking about income inequality. He's always talking about climate change. When does he start talking about things that the Bible actually talks about? I don't know. But he's doing these little deals with Vladimir Putin in Russia and also with China. And we should probably be a little worried about that. So they're banning the Bible in China. Now, we're going to get into some things that China's doing in America and how China is also trying to impose a governmental version of morality through social credit scores. Kind of like that episode of The Black Mirror, you know, where they were kind of like Yelp on their phone. You know, if you interact with somebody, say, hey, how are you doing today? I'm doing great. 5 stars. And then if you piss somebody off, that person gets a 1 star. He can't take a flight anymore. He has to take the bus or maybe the train or maybe has to hoof it because his credit score goes down. Yeah, sounds crazy? They're doing that in China. And they're also digging in to where? American campuses. Really? All through academia. You haven't seen crazy stuff happening on campuses, have you? No, not at all. Maybe China has something to do with it. We're going to get into that on the other side of the break. Stick with me.
This is Adrian Slade.
The Adrian Slade Broadcast.
You know, on this cultural appropriation stuff we were talking at the beginning of the program, do you remember the band The Vapors? I mean, should we go back and, you know, just basically accost them for culturally appropriating, you know? I think I'm turning Japanese. I really think so. You know, I mean, should we get on them for culturally appropriating? I mean, You know, maybe Vox will write a piece about how Styx Kilroy should apologize for saying, "Thank you very much, Mr. Roboto," in Japanese. You know, maybe we can get on Iggy Pop for writing China Girl, you know? I mean, it's so stupid, but the left, you know, they're going to take their government centralized control, their lust for controlling you, and they're going to wield their interest upon you. They're going to make you do as they wish, and they're going to laud governments that can successfully make that happen, such as China. Maybe they'll do it with social credit scores, like that show The Black Mirror. It was amazing. I remember watching that show and thinking, that is just eerie. Because The Black Mirror, if you don't know what The Black Mirror is, it's a Netflix show. It kind of has like a Twilight Zone kind of feel, Alfred Hitchcock. You know, each show is kind of bizarre in its own matter. In this one episode, basically everybody, you know, they're on their phones. And everybody has a rating. It's almost like an Amazon rating when you rate their products, or like Yelp, you know, you rate a restaurant or, you know, a business, but everybody has their own personal rating. And so anytime you interact with somebody, you know, you get likes. It's like your Facebook or your Twitter, you know, you get likes and followers and, you know, you become popular. If you interact with somebody and you do something nice, you know, they might give you a good review, you know, and then what happens is some people were trying really hard to get, you know, really high reviews. They just couldn't get up past the 4.25. And so they wanted to try a little harder and get in with the good crowd. And in doing so, they got really frustrated, started making mistakes, and then their ratings started collapsing. And in doing so, they weren't able to take airplane rides. They had to travel by bus. Then they ended up having to walk because no one would pick them up. You know, finally, somebody who also had a bad rating, who was a truck driver, ended up just saying, "Hey, look, my rating sucks too. I'm going to pick you up and do you a solid." You know, and it ended up being this like really bizarre sub-society. Well, China has decided to do this for real. And maybe that's how they're going to, you know, the left will adopt this in America once they gain control of governmental power. And maybe that's how they'll get on cultural appropriation. You know, you want to be a ska rock reggae band? Bunch of white kids doing some Sublime kind of tunes? Well, you're culturally appropriating reggae. So we're going to have to hit you with a credit score, you know, and we're going to take you down a notch. So back on June 14th, 2014, the State Council of China published an ominous sounding document called Planning Outline for the Construction of a Social Credit System. In the way of the Chinese policy documents, it was lengthy and rather dry, but it contained a radical idea. What if there was a national trust score that rated the kind of citizen you are? Imagine a world where many of your daily activities were constantly monitored and evaluated. What you buy on shops and online, where you are at a given time, who your friends are, how you interact with them, how many hours you spend watching content or playing video games, what bills and taxes you pay or not pay. It's not a hard picture because most of that already happens thanks to these data collecting behemoths like Google, Facebook, Instagram, health tracking apps like Fitbit. But imagine a system where all of these behaviors are rated as either positive or negative and distilled into a single number according to the rules set by the government. That would create you a citizen score. And it would tell everyone whether you were trustworthy or not. Plus, your rating would be publicly ranked against that of the entire population and used to determine your eligibility for a mortgage, a job, where your children can go to school, or even your chances at getting a date. A futuristic vision of Big Brother out of control? Nope, it's already going underway in China, where the government is developing the Social Credit System, or SCS, to rate the trustworthiness of its 1.3 billion citizens. The Chinese government is pitching the system as a desirable way to measure and enhance trust nationwide and build a culture of sincerity. Yeah, that can't go wrong, can it? No, the government mandating morality. That always seems to work. Of course, my question always is, who regulates the regulators? When do the regulators come into play, because they're the ones that are allowed to be corrupt. They're the ones that make out like bandits because no one is watching them. And then those that want to be free of that system are the ones greasing their wheels. They're the ones kicking back. You know, they're the ones receiving the kickbacks from the elites, you know, the rich Hollywood elites. Maybe they want to have, you know, free reign not to be judged under this system. So what do? They pay the regulators to look the other way so that they're not judged by this system. Or maybe they want to enhance this system so that their popularity rises. Well, they just kick back some of their millions to the regulators. No sweat off their back. They've got plenty of money. But you, on the other hand, you don't get to have that ability. You have to be judged based on the merits of the system that they require of you. And that is where the failings of government come into play every single time. And you have to keep that in mind. That is why you do not place this ability in the hands of government. Now, China's also reaching into American campuses. This from Foreign Policy Magazine. China's long arm reaches into American campuses. When Chinese President Xi Jinping, I always mess that up, but I don't care. Who cares about that guy? On a September 24th, 2015 visit in America, hundreds of Chinese students lined the streets for hours, carrying banners and flags to welcome him. It was a remarkable display of a seemingly spontaneous show of patriotism, except that wasn't really spontaneous. The Chinese embassy paid the students to attend the event, which was organized by them. Working with the Chinese Students and Scholars Association, the CSSA, at local universities, a Chinese student organization with branches at dozens of schools all across the country. Government officials from the Office of Educational Affairs at the Chinese Embassy in Washington collected the contact information of about 700 students who had signed up to attend. Embassy officials communicated with students via WeChat, a Chinese messaging app, during the event and into the night, responding to messages at least up to about 3 a.m. According to a Chinese student at George Washington University who attended the event, participants received about $20 for their effort distributed through the CSSA a few months later. It wasn't an isolated example of paid political mobilization. A similar arrangement had occurred in February of 2012 when the president of China visited Washington as vice chairman. In that case, it took almost a year for the embassy to transfer the promised funds to George Washington CSSA division. In January 2013, a student group sent a message, recently reviewed by Foreign Policy, to its members saying that compensation for the president welcome the previous year was finally available and that they could come pick up the cash at the campus community center if they brought the photo ID of themselves with them. The George Washington CSSA did not respond to the request for comment. When then-President Hu Jintao visited China or Chicago in 2011, the University of Wisconsin-Madison CSSA bussed in Chinese students, excited about a free trip to the city and a chance to glimpse at the president. The association also surprised the students at the conclusion of the trip with a small cash payment. The embassy sponsored welcome parties, which led an aura of power and popularity to the visiting leaders. They're just one example of the close relationship that Chinese government maintains with Chinese students across the United States. That relationship often focuses on student safety and well-being. But in past years, Xi has strengthened the party's control over every aspect of Chinese society and sought to extend his power abroad. This is something that has marked or markedly increased their efforts in exerting ideological influence over students, leaving some CSSA members weary to speak out against what they see as unwanted government intrusion. While many countries, including the United States, fund educational activities abroad, the Chinese government's direct support for and control over student groups appears to be unique. Beijing's influence over these groups is also beginning to raise questions and concerns among students on American campuses, who fear they will be accused of being agents of espionage. The growing ties are also concerning U.S. government officials who are wary of Chinese political and economic reach in the United States. At a security hearing last month, FBI Director Christopher Wray said that the American universities are naive about the intelligence risk of Chinese, quote, non-traditional collectors, especially in the academic setting. The claim that Chinese poses a, quote, whole of society threat. Those comments have alarmed some Chinese students. Several Georgetown University student representatives wrote an open letter to the president asking the school to disavow Ray's statements and calling the comments a witch hunt, a McCarthyist craze. The article also cited Foreign Policy's recent report revealing that the Georgetown CSSA has received Chinese government funding. So, obviously, China has locked down its society. Obviously, Xing has decided to take total control of its country. And with recent developments of what's going on with North Korea, we don't know what's happening on that front. You know, North Korea is suddenly just giving up, you know, American hostages. It's releasing its nuclear weapons program. But its weapons program was developed with Iran. I think it was handled in Syria and with the help of the Chinese. So maybe the Chinese are withholding that weapons program now. Who knows? But China has become very nationalistic. They have built these military fake islands all in their area. I mean, they're ready for war. And we have started this economic war with them through these trade agreements. I'm not sure where this goes. But when we're looking at Russia, when we're looking at things happening in the Middle East that we spent the last two shows on, what we really have to worry about is China, because China is the model the left really wants. It's communist. It's also running its economy in such a fashion that it looks good on the outside, but it's basically being held hostage by its Chinese government, by its communist government. And whether it be the Soviet Union, you know, basically determining what everybody gets, what house you live in, what square footage house you live in, what car you get, whether it be the squalor and, you know, the economic collapse of Venezuela that they want us to be in, you know, where they're eating their pets, whether they want us to be living the way Cuba is, where we're driving around in cars not made past 1950, and we're using them to be repurposed as boats to get the hell away from there. I mean, this is what the left wants. They want that model. Of course, they're going to run around and, you know, spout off Norwegian and, you know, Swedish countries. But what they don't realize is it always comes back to what China's doing, where they have to control their citizens, where they have to build a border to keep them in because people don't want to be there, because they're going to build 1957 Ford Edsels into boats and sail the hell away from there, where they're going to scale the Berlin Wall to get the hell out of there, where they're going to scale the southern border wall to get the heck in here, because capitalism works. And what we have to worry about is the takeover by the left to implement what China's doing, removing Bibles, you know, squashing out Christianity, giving you credit scores, social credit scores, and mandating morality through government will. These are the things that bother me as a conservatarian. They should bother you as well. I'm Adrian Slade. Thanks for tuning in. Check out the podcast, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play, Spreaker, TuneIn app, iHeart. You can also get the free Roku channel, Adrian Slade Show Roku channel, in your Roku streaming store. Subscribe. Go on patreon.com. You can hit me up. You can even donate whatever you want. You can pick an amount. Support the show. I could definitely use your financial support to make this show more expansive. You can do $2 a month if you want exclusive content. In any case, we'll see you guys next time.